You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, with me is
Ryan, the movie guy, and this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we go to the zoo and cover our top five favorite animal movies.
I love animals. It should be great. I'm going to the circus next weekend.
So, are you?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you working it or?
No, I gave that up years ago. Couldn't fit in that little car anymore.
We are covering our favorite animal movies, Matt, because Life of Pi is coming out in theaters. I'm pumped for this one.
Yeah, I told you my whole Life of Pi joke, right?
You did.
Yeah, with my mom pushing the book on me. So I'm excited to see the movie so I can lie and tell her I read the book.
We are going eye for an eye, actually, Interested or Ignore on Life of Pi, and also Hitchcock coming out in theaters.
Sweet.
Yeah. We also have an awesome guest that's going to be joining us shortly, Gus Spellman, producer and editor over at The Onion here in Chicago.
Finally, we cracked the onion nut.
Yes.
So Gus is popping our onion cherry. That doesn't sound good, but I promise it will be good.
Exciting things always going on at The Onion, so I can't wait to get him in here.
I'm a huge fan.
We also have a review of Lincoln this week and DVD reviews of Rock of Ages and My Sister's Sister.
And for what it's worth, I caught a movie, Rye.
Oh, boy.
It wasn't in the theater, though. It's on YouTube, the entire movie, The Phantom Tollbooth, a childhood classic. So I revisited that. Maybe I have a couple of words for you.
Wonderful. In addition to all that, yourself versus Gus in movie trivia. In honor of Hitchcock, we are doing movies about Hollywood, movie trivia.
Movies about Hollywood. Okay. That's
pretty And there's meta. A Red Dawn remake out there that me and you are going to Cinema War on.
Yep. Which you're going to lose.
Jam-packed episode as always, Matt. So without further ado, we bring in our guest. He is an editor and producer at The Onion here in Chicago. Gus Spellman, welcome to Cinema Jaw.
Thanks. Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Gus, you're an editor and producer. I mean, you're doing a lot of like film and video stuff for The Onion. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I should say I'm a video editor, not a paper editor. But yeah, I do a couple of shows a week. The big one that we do is The Week in Review, a recap of all of the best paper stories from the week. We film little video segments for each of them and then string them together in a sort of news recap segment. It's usually about 2 to 3 minutes long, and they're always really funny. They're just a lot of fun to make.
So you're like a video podcaster, I mean, pretty much.
Sort of, yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit like that. We basically film video, like, interviews with one character from each story, and then we'll string them together with VO and footage and stills and other assets from CNN and Getty, and just try to make it feel as newsy as possible is the goal. Just play it as straight and as newsy as possible.
And now, growing up, Gus, were you a fan of The Onion?
Oh, yeah.
As a kid and in college and such?
Yeah. I first heard about The Onion, I think, when I was, I guess, in seventh grade in 2001. My dad came home on September 12th, and we lived in New York, and he came home and he was like, "Guys, I saw the funniest thing today." And he brought out The Onion, the headline for which was, you know, big picture of the Twin Towers, obviously, and it said, "Holy fucking shit." And I was like, this is pretty much the awesomest thing ever. And I've been a huge fan ever since, and I was so stoked to start working there.
Definitely a difficult topic to hit with a comedic note, and I remember that Onion as well. It's one of the few papers I actually saved from 2001. It was The Onion and maybe The Red Eye, but yeah that'll do it.
Yeah, it was just like the perfect way to deal with it, at least for me. I feel like they get that darkness so right so many times. That's what I love about it.
You've been working in Chicago based here at The Onion the entire time?
No, well, we just moved here a couple months ago, starting in July, and I was working for them for about a month before that in New York, and they said, "Hey, you know, we're moving to Chicago. Would you want to come out with us?" And I'd been wanting to leave New York anyway because I'd lived there my whole life, and my girlfriend lived here, so I was like, yes, perfect. Hired.
So in New York was more the video side of The Onion. I know we do have like the AV Club was always based here in Chicago.
Yeah, well, it was the paper, basically the creative, all the creative stuff for the parody side of The Onion, so not the AV Club, that was all based in New York for a really long time, basically since 2001. In fact, that September 11th issue was their first print issue while they were in New York. So,
geez, what a way to get started, man.
I know. About I'm sure it was a huge scramble back then.
Oh, man.
Worked out, obviously. But yeah, so I've been here basically since they moved to Chicago. I was one of the later people to come out because they moved the paper writers here before they moved the video production here. So I've been here 3.5 months, 2.5 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I like just moved here.
That's awesome, and you're already on a podcast.
Yeah.
Such as it is.
And is it all consolidated now, the Onion, in one building?
Yeah, pretty That's much. Nice. Yeah, it's nice. It's a little cramped right now because it's the building that they've been using for a while, and we've got new digs coming up soon, which we're really excited about. We're going to have an awesome green screen studio in there and everything. But right now, it's all in the building that they've been at for a while.
So the Onion, being a modern newspaper, is having to adapt and change with the whole, like, you know, the print side of things getting smaller and smaller. You were even saying it might blink out of existence altogether, maybe.
Yeah, the like, you know, the physical paper, I think, is slowly getting phased out. I'm not too involved in that. But I think that they've just decided that, you know, there's no reason to waste the paper and, you know, waste the money on getting it printed. It just went out of New York a couple weeks ago, and I think Chicago is one of the only cities that we still print in.
It's a shame, though, because I look forward to those compendium volumes. I have to have at least six of them.
Well, they just released a new book that's not a compendium, which is really cool. It's like all original content, called The Onion Book of Known Knowledge, which is really awesome and really funny. They've been going around doing book tours for it. I encourage everyone to check it out, because it's totally, totally sweet.
And it's amazing. I used to think, because the Onion in my head, when I was first exposed to it, is just a bunch of college guys writing a newspaper, like comedy writers. But how many people now are all involved at the Onion? You got this AV club, you got writers, you're doing video type stuff.
Yeah, not as many as you'd think. I would say that the paper probably has around 10 people. Production has around 10 regular people. So it's actually a very small group of severely overworked individuals.
So what's next? I mean, is there a project that you're working on now that you could talk about?
Yeah, actually, we're premiering this week a brand new show in a brand new format. We're trying to do more timely content, because the paper has started gearing up and doing more of what they call fast tracks, where they'll write articles on news that's come out that day or the day before, just getting it out there as fast as possible. And as you guys probably know, that's really hard to do with video. You know, you can't just make a video. It's hard to, like, get an actor, get everything together, make the video in one day, and do that every single day. But we're working on a format to make that work, and it's going to come out this Wednesday, probably.
And you're
going to
be the editor of that?
Yeah, I'm going to be editing. Oh, it's me and another guy, Marty Kramer. We're going to switch off episodes, because I'm still also doing the week in review. But it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm really excited to see it come out.
And where's the best place for jawheads listening to this to catch that? We'll
just be on theonion.com, just right on the main homepage.
Oh,
yeah, since we, you know, since it's so timely, we don't know exactly when it'll come out, but it'll be sometime between 5 and 8 p.m. Central, 6 and 9 Eastern, probably, and first one's going to be Wednesday, so keep your eyes open. It's going to be awesome.
And that's a free service going to the onion.com, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which,
totally.
Jawheads, if you haven't been, definitely check it out. I mean, the
bookmark it.
Yes. The humor on the Onion is an American institution, I think. It's hilarious.
Well, yeah. Is it the world's finest or America's finest news
source? It's America's finest news source.
So there you go.
Sure. Sure.
But it's, yeah, there's really nothing out there like it. And if you haven't watched it, not to toot my own horn, but it's awesome. You guys should totally check it out.
Definitely, Jawheads. Check out theonion.com. A lot of exciting things always happening over there.
Oh, for sure. Like I said, huge fan. Have been for years. So
for sure. So Gus Spellman is going to be hanging out with us the entire episode. He actually has his five favorite movies dealing with animals. Before we get there, we go Eye for an Eye, Interest or Ignore on two new movies. And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
The New 400, our good friends, the New
yes,
400 Theater.
We were just over there
today
for Wreck-It Ralph, Matt.
Yeah.
Full liquor bar. They have the best prices on first-run movies in all of Chicago. 3D movies now with their digital projection, and they're only $8.50. You can't go wrong.
You just said it all. There's really nothing for me to add. Check out what's playing at thenew400.com, and we thank them for their support of Cinema Jaw.
Wonderful. Up first, Eye for an Eye, is The Life of Pi. A young man who survives a disaster at sea is hurled into an epic journey of adventure and discovery. While cast away, he forms an unexpected connection with another survivor, a fearsome Bengal tiger. Based on the best-selling novel of the same name, the film is directed by Ang Lee. Matt, interested or ignore on The Life of Pi?
I'm a big Ang Lee fan. I really am. A lot of, even the films people say they don't like from him, I'm a big fan of. Plus, like I said, I gotta see this because my mom expects me to have read the book. And it looks visually stunning. So yeah, interested. Sorry, that was long-winded, so.
Gus, interest or ignore on the life of Pi?
I gotta say ignore. I haven't been a big Ang Lee fan since Crouching Tiger. I don't know, Kid on a Boat with a Tiger. Hard for me to imagine something I'm less interested in. Sorry if that's disappointing for you guys.
My girlfriend's the reader of the family. You know, she read the Life of Pi and was excited in the sense that they were making the movie, but thought it would be challenging because so much of the adventure actually takes place in the
kid's his mind. Right, he's on a life raft.
Right, and you got this tiger on there, and you see this visual in the trailer of the whale coming out of the water.
Sure, that looks awesome.
Knowing Ang Lee's behind it, I think he could pull it off. I'm hoping for something big here because I think it looks pretty spectacular. And like yourself, Matt, big Ang Lee fan, I'm giving it an interest.
I like that shot, too. It's like the Free Willy moment with the whale going over the
shore. Sure, it looks like it's going to be visually cool, but it sort of looks like, in movie form, it's going to be like Tree of Life light, and I hated Tree of Life, and I'm not going to like a light version of that. That's just my take.
Fair.
He's honest. We got another one going eye for an eye, Matt, and this one is Hitchcock, a love story between influential filmmaker Alfred Hitchcock and his wife Alma during the filming of Psycho in 1959, which proved to be a struggle for him. The film stars Anthony Hopkins as Alfred Hitchcock. Helen Mirren plays his wife. Also in the cast is Scarlett Johansson, Toni Collette, Jessica Biel, and, you ready for it, Matt?
I'm ready.
Ralph Macchio.
Whoa. The Karate Kid himself.
Absolutely.
Wait,
Matt,
are they making Avengers here, Matt, or Hitchcock?
Interested or ignore on Hitchcock?
You know, for Ralph Macchio alone, I'm interested. Dude, yeah, it's Hitchcock. Everybody's got to see this, I think. It's a required viewing.
Gus, interest or ignore on Hitchcock?
I'm going to go interest. I think it's going to be bad, but I'm still interested.
Yeah. I actually got to join Gus on this one because I'm not sold on that this movie is going to be all that great. I don't believe Anthony Hopkins as Alfred Hitchcock. To me, it looks like Anthony Hopkins in makeup. And that right away, that gets distracting for me. But I am interested always to hear a backstory about something like this, of a filmmaker making a movie or a writer writing a book. Always very interested in that kind of stuff. So I'm giving it a slight interest.
It's Alfred freaking Hitchcock, dude. I mean, come on.
See, my problem is that I went to school with a professor who knew Hitchcock really well.
Like, personally, you?
Yeah. Did like a huge Hitchcock class. So I've like heard a lot about him. I know a lot of what he supposedly was personally like. And so, you know, since this is my professor, I 100% believe everything she says about him. So I know that this movie is just going to get it wrong, and I'm going to hate it and call her up, and we're going to complain about it.
Fair enough.
We heard it here first, Matt. Three interesteds on Hitchcock, two are just slightly interested, and two interesteds, one ignore, on The Life of Pi. Speaking of Hitchcock, we wanted to go, before we get to our favorite animal movies, wanted to go round robin on what everybody's favorite Hitchcock film is. And we'll start with our guest this week. Gus, do you have a favorite that jumps out at you when we're talking Hitchcock?
Yeah, I think that I have to go. I've gone back and forth on this between Vertigo and Rear Window. I think that I have to go Vertigo, ultimately. It's just an incredible movie. There's really nothing like it in terms of quality or concept. He's just like, it's just about a person who becomes really horrible and stays really horrible for a really long time. And it's so compelling. It's just interesting, which is a really vague word that I hate to use, but it's such an interesting movie. I can't stay away from it.
And I'll go next here, Matt, because I'm actually going to join him with the Vertigo pick. For me, it's actually between Vertigo and North by Northwest. I just love the adventure in North by Northwest. Always one of my favorites. But really, I agree with you. Vertigo is, I think it's just a step above actually everything else that he's done. And the concept of the film, like you were saying, just the idea of it, Kim Novak playing, you know, two roles, the way it starts out is great. I gotta go Vertigo myself.
You know, I think if I'm being honest, I love Vertigo. I love Rear Window. I even love Rope, which is unsung one of his movies. I think that one's great. But I have to stick with The Birds, man. I'm more of a horror fan. Thank you. Yeah, more of a horror fan myself. So I think The Birds is just such an awesome movie. And it's really, if you want to split hairs, I think it could be called the first zombie movie. So, although Night of the Living Dead might have come before it, I'd have to check my facts on that.
That's actually a really interesting way to put it. Should I?
Yeah, no, please.
Sure. Yeah, it's like a really interesting way to put it. My problem with Birds as a favorite Hitchcock is that the emotional storyline of that movie is, I feel like, one of the weaker ones. And what's so great about Hitchcock is the way that the suspense and the emotions are so tightly interwoven. And yeah, when you and have you like a weak emotional storyline.
You don't get that
Hitchcock,
so much in Birds.
You lose it. Yeah.
I listen, guys. I couldn't disagree more. I mean, you got the love interest between Tippi Hedren and I can't remember the male lead's name at the moment here. Which, by the way, before we go further, I hate to take us off track, but I have to say we'll get to that. Okay. All right. We'll get to that. All right. The love interest there is great. The chemistry on screen is great. And then when they get to the island and you meet his overbearing mom, who hasn't been through that, you know? Like with an in-law that's just, you know, maybe at least at first doesn't quite like you, so you have to win them over. And then, you know, throw in the Birds where all hell's breaking loose and you meet his old girlfriend. I mean, that's a deep relationship.
I don't know. Tippi Hedren just doesn't do it for me.
I love her.
I can't get into her. I can't get into her and Marnie either. I just think she's not a good actress, and I think that the movie suffers for it a lot. That's just my take.
All right.
Now, right before we got started here, I threw this out on Twitter to the Jawheads. I just shot a tweet out there, and I said, hey, what's your favorite Hitchcock film and why? We get any responses, Matt?
Yeah, we did, as a matter of fact. Hit Battersea said Vertigo. The combination of its music, visuals, and editing makes you feel like you're in a dream.
Ah, he agrees with us. Me and Gus, good taste.
Yeah. Film buff Baker said North by Northwest. Director at the top of his game, great mix of action, suspense, and comedy. The crop duster scene is perfection.
And yeah, come on, that crop duster scene, one of the best in film history, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Pretty amazing.
No doubt about that. Mark Hearn also agreed with Vertigo, said incredible opening and closing scenes. May have one, but not both. Dual performance by Kim Novak, James Stewart.
Enough said.
Yeah, Mark Hearn. Sophie88 says, Rear Window, because it happened to me to imagine being in the place of L.B. Jeffries. We all have a curious side.
I do love Rear Window, too.
Yeah. I mean, Rear Window,
man,
it's kind of like
a
perfect movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost too perfect, I think, is part of the problem with it. But just about that crop duster scene, the thing that's so amazing about that scene is that it makes you completely forget one of the like greatest illogicalities in any movie ever, which is that if the people chasing Cary Grant believe that he is who they think he is, how do they think they're going to trick him into meeting who he says he isn't? Do you know what I mean?
You lost me, Gus.
Okay. They think that he's, what's his name? I can't remember the name of the character.
Right.
So they think that he is a secret agent.
Right.
And he says he's not. They call him and say, hey, go meet this secret agent here. So if they really think that he's the secret agent, they're going to know that he knows that he can't meet the secret agent at this place. And yet
I know that
anyway.
You know that we know that I know kind of thing.
Right. It doesn't make any sense. Watch the movie again and think about it. It doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't matter because that scene completely blows that out of your mind, and it's pretty great. Anyway, sorry to sidetrack you guys.
Hey, we like the sidetrack in here.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Before we go any further, Matt, because I got a review of Lincoln, we have a new producer here on Cinema Jaw.
Yeah, no, Engineer Rye.
Engineer. Yes, that's right. He wants to be called an engineer.
It's Engineer Elias. So Reno has passed the torch, let's say. He's obviously still going to be around, and maybe even Reno will be in guest producing, but Elias is taking the reins, so Elias Rodriguez, welcome to Cinema Jaw. Thanks for stepping in.
He's part of the Wood Sugars group. Welcome,
yes,
Elias.
Thank you very much. I was a huge fan of Cinema Jaw, and I'm honestly really excited to become the regular engineer. I don't want to say producer because I don't edit, and that props goes to Matt, and I think he really deserves props
or
to that.
Or blame, depending on from, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, bear with me, Jawheads. I'm definitely getting the audio, getting the kinks out. So, but, yeah. Thank you, guys.
And why I was pointing to him in that last segment is because we're going to do a new segment with Elias that I think a lot of the fans have been screaming for. And I'm not sure, are we going to call it the Jaw Box? Or
yeah, the Jaw Bits, where Elias will be looking up the things that we can't remember, such as
the male lead in the Birds.
Name, you know,
right.
and so forth.
Did Birds come before or after Night of the Living Dead?
Right. I'll make sure to look those up and have the info later.
Yes. Yeah.
So right after the break, we'll come in with those facts. So.
Yes. And speaking of Reno, too, what just such a wonderful job that he's done here on Cinema John. We didn't get to say a correct send-off to him last episode
because
we were in a gallery. It was very loud. But I'm sure he'll end up listening to this episode. And I just wanted to say he did just a spectacular job. And you go around your whole life, Matt, meeting people every single day, and most of them, you can't remember 5 years down the road, but you meet a guy like Reno, and he impacts not just Cinema Jaw, but my whole life. I love the guy.
Yeah, dude, I couldn't have said it better. I've worked with him for 10 years, and he's a great guy. So you know what? We're going to do it proper and get a little outro interview with Reno. And thanks for bearing with us, Gus. We're going to do this right, and hopefully we'll have that for you guys next episode.
Matt, I did catch a viewing of Lincoln. And sitting through Spielberg's latest film brought me back to my days over at Nazareth Academy, sitting in Mr. Jaglin's history class, shooting spitballs over at Tim Allison. While this film is an amazing accomplishment from a historical point of view, I did not find it all that entertaining. Daniel Day-Lewis does a phenomenal job as Old Abe. He will no doubt receive his fifth Oscar nomination for this performance. He is not the only star in the film, either. In fact, every role seemed to have a big name behind it, Matt. Sally Fields shined as his wife, and Tommy Lee Jones knocks it out of the park as Representative Thaddeus Stevens. Meanwhile, David Stratham, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, James Spader, and John Hawkes are all wonderful in their small roles. The story is not that of Lincoln's life, but just of the 3 weeks leading up to the passing of the 13th Amendment to abolish slavery. Much of the drama takes place inside the House of Representatives as they argue over the amendment. The film fails
Sounds
to take
action-packed.
Us out of Washington gridlock and show us the current state of the Union and the impact the amendment will have on the nation. While I enjoyed the history refresher, I cannot say this is one of the best movies of the year. I would actually say skip it in the theaters, see it on DVD some lazy Sunday, ride the movie guy's grade, 2 3/4 jaw.
Wow. I really expected you to, like, wet your pants over this movie, dude.
Yeah, it was long and very thoughtful. I'm not saying, like I said, I enjoyed it on that
like
level.
That.
But it didn't have that, like, big, impactful moment where, you know, Lincoln was talking in the House of Representatives. I mean, when the vote goes through, I guess what I found out, I always think of, like, Lincoln passed this amendment. He's in the White House playing with his kid while the representatives are the ones finally
Did he do the Gettysburg Address? Probably not, right?
It starts off with the soldiers recapping the address of that Lincoln had made and different speeches that he does. So you do hear some of Lincoln's famous speeches throughout the film, but there's no one great moment where Lincoln gets up and makes this almighty powerful speech and, you know,
really?
The cameras rotating sounds around like, him or anything like that.
Sounds
no.
like a missed opportunity. Have you seen this one, Gus?
No, I haven't. I have to say, from the trailer, and granted, I never trust trailers, but from the trailer, this one looked almost unwatchable. It just looks really overbearing to me. I'm not a fan of Daniel Day-Lewis. Which
Bite your tongue.
That's awesome. I thought I was
right here.
So many dirty looks.
Matt, you're an
listen,
asshole.
No, listen.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Lewis is an overrated. He's
an
overrated
man. I'm just putting my microphone
down. He is. Actually, I think, when was that? 2 or 3 episodes ago? We had to argue, is he overrated or is he the best?
No.
And I totally won.
Oh, well.
You probably did.
I'm glad Gus isn't judging that cinema war. Boy, oh boy. But really, just for Lincoln, 2 3/4 jaw for Lincoln. Not going to be on my top 10 list, I don't think, come end of the year. No animals in the movie. You do got some horses, but no major animal characters in the film. And that's our topic this week. Because of Life of Pi coming out in theaters, we are covering our favorite animal movies. And this is animals, main characters, or could be movies that are just dealing with animals, or even maybe a documentary might pop up on somebody's list. Hint, hint. Matt, you're getting us started this week.
Okay, I will say this. I didn't take too many rules because we were going to play this nice and loose, but I did decide to stay away from animations on my list.
As did I.
Okay, cool. So my number 5 is the Clint Eastwood vehicle, this is a twofer, Any Which Way But Loose and Any Which Way You Can. With Clyde the Orangutan as his sidekick, it is most definitely an animal movie, because not many people have a pet orangutan, especially truckers. This was a really risky move for Clint Eastwood in that point in his career. You know, he had just come off that string of spaghetti westerns. Everybody told him not to do this movie. He went ahead and did it. And even though it was mostly panned by the critics, it remains one of his most popular movies. Like, the fans love it. So.
I haven't seen it in a long, long time.
It's been a while for
me,
too.
Yeah, but when I was a kid, I remember watching it with my dad and being a big fan, obviously, because of the orangutan that reminds me of yourself. But I liked it as a kid. But again, haven't seen it in a long time. Good pick, though, Matt. A lot of times you start off with a sort of a stuttering start.
I'll get there. Don't worry.
Yeah. All right. We'll swing it over to Gus. What do you got sitting at 5?
All right. So I think sitting at 5, I have to do The Jungle Book. And I'm not talking about the Disney one. I'm talking about the, I think it's 1996 live action version that's got Cary Elwes and John Cleese and a young Lena Headey. This is a movie that I loved when I was a kid. And to be honest, most of the animal movies that you see our kids' movies. So this had a special place in my heart. It's just so awesome. You have the bear, and it's a real bear.
Baloo.
Yeah. It's just messing stuff up. Cary Elwes is great as a villain. And it's directed by the guy who did The Mummy and The Mummy Returns, which are also totally sweet. I don't know. Awesome, awesome underrated movie that probably nobody else remembers.
I got to throw it on the queue. I've never seen it.
I don't know if I've ever seen live action, but if I was going to, I was thinking I might do one animation, and the one I was thinking was Jungle Book. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, I agree. The story is pretty much the same in both. So,
yeah, the Disney Jungle Book, for some reason, it never like grabbed me the way that a lot of the other other Disney movies did. It has some great songs, but this Jungle Book, I remember it being awesome when I was eight.
Awesome, you heard it here first. Swings us over to my number five, and at number five, I have a film that came out in 2005. If I'm going to catch flack for any of them on my list, it's going to be this one, Matt. Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
No, I won't give any crap
wonderful,
there.
Wonderful. Obviously based on the C.S. Lewis books, and when the series started with this movie, I was pumped. It was a good adaptation of the book. I got excited for the series. Since then, the next two movies were just terrible.
Well, the second one was all right, but they definitely get worse.
Worse, for sure. And the third one, the Dawn Treader.
Yeah, the Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
That
yeah.
was just junk. But, of course, you got the talking animals in Narnia. Some are actual animals like beavers and wolves, but you also have some mythical characters as well.
Yeah, like the minotaurs right. and stuff like that. Yeah.
And it's got an awesome battle at the end where they're all like charging at each other. Tilda Swinton's in here as the evil queen. That worked for me. You see this one?
Yeah.
Can I get an awesome from you, Gus? Gus, can I get an awesome?
You can't get an awesome. You can get an I saw this one with my girlfriend when I was 16, and I remember that it was an awesome time, but I don't remember the movie that well.
Have you read the books?
Yeah, I'd read the books a long time ago.
Same here, yeah.
I love the books.
Yeah, that was my number five.
I like it. Good pick.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you. Swings us into our fours. What do you got there, Matt?
If you're talking about animals, you cannot leave this guy off your list. The 1982 fantasy classic Beastmaster. Have you seen this one?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, it was course. In my honorables.
So, I mean, this is about a guy. His name is Dar, and he's the illegitimate prince or the estranged prince. He's not illegitimate, but
yeah.
he was taken away from his seat of power.
Right. He was the real prince.
Right. And he's got to fight his way back, and he has this power to communicate with animals.
And that's because he was born in a cow.
Yeah, something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and it's cool how he uses his different animals. He's got like a pair of ferrets that he'll use them to steal things.
Yeah,
and,
such as keys to get him out of a locked cell.
Yeah, stuff like that. And it's been a while since I've seen this one. It's definitely time for a respin. It's camp classic, though. I love this.
It's one of my favorites growing up. I love the Beastmaster.
I saw this randomly, actually, about 6 years ago. It was just on HBO somehow. It has one of the most excellent and silliest shots ever where he has friends that are rats, I think.
Yeah,
and they're being
ferrets.
Ferrets, right? That's right. And they're being chased, and the camera is just going crazy. It's like the shakiest shaky cam of all time. It's pretty sick.
Yeah, because he also has a hawk that he can use the vision of the hawk to see what's going on.
Right, he can see through the animals.
He sees through the hawk. Right.
Yeah.
Beastmaster is the bomb. It's sort of like a poor man's Conan, but.
It sure was.
I think it actually transcends Conan. So
I love that pick, Matt. Nice one. Nice one. Gus, what do you got sitting at four?
Number four is My Side of the Mountain, which is a 1963 movie. It's just about a kid who I can't actually remember how he gets stuck in the wilderness, but he gets stuck in the wilderness, and he sort of makes do and makes it by. He has a peregrine falcon that he's very close with who is shot at one point in the movie, and it's one of the saddest things ever.
Oh, man.
You hate to see that.
Yeah, no fun when your falcon gets shot. But, yeah, it made a really big impression on me, and it fostered my continuing fantasy of wanting to just move out to the wilderness by myself. So
That is two for two that I have not seen of Gus's picks.
I agree.
Neither of you guys have seen My Side of the Mountain?
No.
This is like a classic movie. All right. Well, anyway. Okay.
I will.
I got two Q-tips already lined up from this episode. I love it.
Absolutely.
At number four, I have a film that came out in 2010. It's not so much an animal movie per se.
You're bending the rules.
But it has a very cute dog in it. It gave me an excuse to mention this film again because I don't think enough people have seen it. I'm speaking of the film The Beginners. Gus, have you seen this one?
I have not seen this one.
Not sure if I have either.
I thought you were going to say a different movie altogether.
This has Ewan McGregor, Christopher Plummer, and Christopher Plummer owns a dog, and Christopher Plummer is Ewan McGregor's dad. Once their mom dies, he actually comes out of the closet and admits that he's been gay and was gay his whole life. The dog, then Christopher Plummer dies, and the dog gets pushed on to Ewan McGregor. And the dog actually talks like in subtitles in the movie. So a lot of times Ewan McGregor will say something to the dog, and the dog will respond something very funny on the bottom of the screen. And there are humorous moments of the dog doesn't like to be left alone, so the dog always has to go with Ewan McGregor everywhere. And he shows him the house. This is the dining room. And you see the dog's face. They do a great job of the relationship between the dog and Ewan McGregor. And the film is, I've revisited it. I own it now. I saw it a second time. Awesome. It's a four-jaw movie, so definitely check out The Beginners if you haven't. I highly recommend.
What did you think he was going to say, Gus?
I thought when I heard you say not technically a dog movie, but it has a really cute dog, I thought it was going to be one of the ones that was going to be on my list, which is Umberto D, an Italian neorealist film. And
Some deep picks.
He
dude.
Does. I
was
going to
say As Good As It Gets was what I was thinking. That's where he was going, but...
No.
Verdell. Remember Verdell?
Yeah.
Cute dog.
We're into our threes, Matt.
It's always these animal movies, like we were saying, a lot of times they're tearjerkers, you know? Like the animal dies, and I'm not going to mention any examples because they could easily be on somebody's list, but this one is definitely one of my favorite cop buddy movies, and Hooch.
Don't go there, Matt.
I mean, tell me this, it didn't make you cry, Ryan, the first time you saw Turner and Hooch. Tom Hanks and the dog, which, you know, I can't remember the dog's name, the
Hooch.
Actor. Yeah, Hooch is fine.
We'll go with Hooch for now.
Which is some sort of like Mastiff Terrier mix or Pit Bull. I don't know. It's just this really ugly dog.
That drools a lot.
Oh, yeah. It looks like it swallowed a sneaker, which is, I think, the line that Tom Hanks uses. It's a disgusting dog, but you come to love it. It's like a hero cop movie kind of thing. It's, you know, it's a fun heartstrings kind of movie. So.
Again, another one I haven't seen in a very long time, but I know when I saw it as a kid, I loved Turner and Hooch.
It's not as cheesy as it sounds by my description. It's actually got some meat to it. It really does.
Did you bother seeing this one, Gus?
This is one that I have never heard of, actually.
No?
Never heard of it? It's Tom Hanks, man.
Yeah. Never heard of it.
Early on in his career.
Well, mid-career, let's say. It was, let me see.
Way before he was working with volleyballs.
Well, this is way after Big, though. I mean, so he was established at this point, so...
Sure. Good pick, Matt. Good pick. Swings us over to Gus's three. What do you got there?
All right, so for number three, I have to go with Jaws, which I can't believe nobody's mentioned yet. Maybe somebody's saving it for the end, but that's a definite animal movie. Fish are animals, absolutely. Sharks are fish. I don't know. Steven Spielberg's done a lot of animal movies. Jurassic Park, you got to count that.
War Horse,
you got to count that, which I actually liked. A lot of people hated. But I don't know. Jaws, like, there's a real personality for that friggin' shark. And obviously, it's created by the filmmaking, but it's also created by the way the characters talk about it. It's just so well constructed. Awesome, awesome animal movie, in my opinion.
I agree. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. Yeah. I think can't go wrong with Jaws.
The only reason I don't have it on my list is because we talk about it so much.
It
crosses so many different genres, yeah. from like horror to animal movie to, I think you can even call it a suspense movie with the shark
sure.
not coming
oh, yeah.
in for the first
yeah.
30, sure. 40 minutes of the film, so... Yeah, it's a great movie.
Nice pick, Gus. Swings us over to my number three. And Matt, I'm breaking the rules here.
Again?
I know.
Jesus, I did this dude.
When I did the miniseries, I picked John Adams for President movies. And here I'm picking two documentaries. And you know, I'm only doing this, Matt, because I care about the Jawheads, and these picks need to be mentioned. But I was writing down one documentary that I wanted to bring
up. Can I guess?
No.
I can guess,
okay.
too.
And as I was writing that one, I thought, oh, my God, I almost forgot about this other one, which was absolutely phenomenal. I know Matt's already thinking, he's going to say March of the Penguins.
The Cove.
No,
well, I was going to say Grizzly Man.
Yes, Grizzly Man's one of them. He's nailed it. But the movie I first thought of was Winged Migration, which came out in 2001. Yeah. It's part documentary, part nature film, part drama, actually. And have you seen this one, Gus?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the way this thing is filmed, I got it as one of the best photography in movie history. It's absolutely...
Yeah, mostly filmed by those drones?
Yes.
Crazy.
It's unbelievable. And actually, they've filmed these birds flying all around the world, how they migrate over a course of 3 years. And sometimes they're on hang gliders. Sometimes they're on these little planes, these gliders that actually the birds started to fly around as it was part of their migration. Oh my! Just watch it for the photography of the movie. It's stunning, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's amazing. And there's this one part that has always stuck with me. I only saw it once, but it's like burned into my brain. Where some of the birds land, and one of the birds has a broken wing. You know the part I'm talking about. And you see a crab who's sort of like moving towards the bird, and the bird tries to move away, but it's got the broken wing. Moves towards the bird. Bird tries to move away, and then it cuts, and there's just a pile of crabs just all over this bird carcass. So
I mean, you would think a movie about bird migration doesn't sound all that fascinating, but I'm telling if you haven't seen it, this is four Jaws all the way through, winged migration. But then as I'm writing that, it pops into my head, Grizzly Man. Oh my. Have you seen this one, Matt?
No.
Oh,
I got to see both of these, man.
Jawheads, if you haven't seen Grizzly Man, just pause it and watch the movie now, the podcast here. 2005, Werner Herzog tells the story of Timothy Treadwell, was the gentleman's name, who was an amateur grizzly bear expert who ended up being eaten by a grizzly bear along with his girlfriend up in Alaska. Then Werner Herzog finds the footage and turns it into a documentary. And this Timothy Treadwell's out there. I mean, he's talking to the bears during this found footage. He actually was on David Letterman, so there's other footage that they show in the movie. And then they also interview people of
he got
Timothy's.
Eaten?
Gone. He's wiped out.
Totally eaten. Like, he was up there for like 13 years, and he he would hang out with the same bears all the time. He thought
Mr.
it was totally
Chocolate,
fine.
He would talk one of the bears as Mr. Chocolate, and when the bear would get close, you see this on screen, he's like, "You're a bad bear, Mr. Chocolate." And you're like, "What the hell is this guy's out
and
of his mind?"
It's on camera, him getting eaten by these bears. They don't put it in the movie, but one of the scenes is Werner Herzog has the footage. He goes to this guy's mother, and he watches the footage in front of the mother, and is like, "Oh, I'm sorry, you should never watch this." It's such a Werner Herzog douchebag move, and it's so funny.
It is. It's a sad movie, but overall, it's funny and shocking. I guess at points you're shocked, but then you start to laugh.
Hey, you got a twofer, dude.
Yeah,
I know, it's so cheap.
All right. Hey, these were my two, Grizzly Man, Winged Migration. Check them both out right there.
Because they were good picks, we'll give you the two.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Swings us into our twos, Matt. What do you got?
If you want to talk about animals, you got to talk about Animal. So my pick for number two?
No.
Yes. The Muppets.
Oh. I thought for sure you were going Animal. That what's that jerk face's name, that comedian?
I don't know who you're talking about.
Rob
from
Schneider.
Saturday Night Live. Yes.
Rob Schneider.
Rob
the
Schneider.
Animal. Yeah,
he did that movie
that
Animal.
Oh, yeah. No, dude, no. It's the Muppets. 2011. I'm going with the most recent one by Jason Segel.
You're going to go with that one?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, I mean, like, the original the Muppets movie would probably be my second choice.
Go on.
No, well, I mean, really, you could do all of them, but it's certainly not going to be Muppets in Space. They take Manhattan, and there was a few others. The Great Muppet Caper. They're all good. But I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm older now, and I'm like thinking I have a kid, you know, so I'm reintroducing him to the things that I grew up with. So I'm being reintroduced to them myself. And the Muppets just came at that point in my life when it made perfect sense. And it was such a sweet movie while not pandering, you know, while not being so sugary sweet. It's like saccharine. It was genuine. It was pitch perfect. I think that's the term I've been using the whole time for this movie. And it was my favorite of the year, if you remember
right. I do remember that topping your list.
I'm a huge Muppets fan, so, I mean, there you go. Animal.
Wow. Big pick right
there.
Frogs,
pigs, bears, you know?
All right, before I go into my next pick, I have to say, just for your kid, Muppet Christmas Carol and Muppet Treasure Island and Muppet Classic Theater. What are you talking about? No way. I was about to walk out here. Are you kidding?
These are the specials. Those weren't the
Michael Caine as Ebenezer Scrooge, Tim Curry as Long John Silver.
I did like that.
Unbelievable.
He's
so
got a
good
point, Matt. He's got a point.
But those are not as good. You got to admit, it's like the first three Muppet
They're
movies.
They're the only Muppet movies I can even bear to watch.
Wow.
We have to agree to disagree on this one,
right.
Gus.
Wow. I like Gus bringing it, though. This is good. Gus, right. What do you got sitting at two? Could it beat the Muppets pick by Matt?
Sitting at two, I've got one that really bends the rules. I'm going to go with a werewolf movie, and I'm going to go with Howling 2, Your Sister is a Werewolf.
Oh, jeez. I don't even know if nice. I can ring the bell on
oh,
this one.
Oh, you got to ring the bell on this one, because it is one of the great movies of all time. And I just caught it at Music Box's Music Box of Horror 24-hour film
sure.
festival. I would go every weekend if they did it every weekend. It was amazing. This movie, Christopher Lee, Sybil Danning, so 80s, so awesome. Best closing credit sequence of all time. I don't know if you guys remember that closing credit sequence.
I haven't seen the movie.
Oh, you guys.
I've seen the original.
If you want a good time, just have more than a couple of beers and watch this movie with some friends. It's heavenly. It's really an incomparable film. There's nothing else like it that
Matt,
I've ever
seen. Matt, it sounds right up your alley.
I think I'm going to watch it tonight. Hopefully it's on Netflix Instant.
I don't know.
They have a lot of those old horror movies.
I know they do. I've been watching them nonstop since the Music Box of Horror. I really, I can't remember if this one's on there, but
I'll find
it. You should find it somehow and watch it because it's a special movie.
Nice. Nice picks going around here. At number two, I keep it simple. I follow the rules. I got one pick here, Matt. Came out in the year 2000, stars Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara. I'm speaking of Best in Show.
That is a good pick.
Thank you, Matt. We'll give it to you. Obviously, Christopher Guest writes, directs, and is in the film as well. And really, when you're talking about this hilarious group of people who compete for the National Dog Show, it's already a funny topic. If like a Werner Herzog covered the real event with the people, it would already be a comedy, you know?
So I think someone did, actually.
They didn't really have to do a whole lot of tweaking to make this thing hilarious because the concept is already, you know, right there for us to enjoy.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I saw this once all the way through, and I just caught parts of it a few months ago, and I was laughing hysterically. I think if I watch it a second time, I'll even love it a lot more than that first viewing that I had. So Best in Show, definitely check it out, Jawheads, if you haven't. Matt, we're into our ones.
Yeah.
And no one's really crossed over here. This is shocking.
Yeah.
And I had a twofer. What do you got sitting at one?
Air Bud 2, Golden Retriever.
<Nice. laughs>
No, all right, I'm just kidding. It's the birds. The birds. Hitchcock. So I think this is a great animal movie because you get to see animals as a force of nature. They don't even really attempt to explain what's happening. I guess they make attempts to explain it, but they cannot comprehend, the characters cannot comprehend why this is happening to them, and the waves of attacks just keep coming. And I was never afraid of birds before, but after I saw this movie, I'm a little nervous of pigeons when I'm walking down the sidewalk. I mean, birds are freaking creepy, and nobody but Hitchcock saw that before this movie, and now everybody sees it, you know? So that's my pick.
I like it. I like it. I like that there's a couple horror films on here for animals. That's good.
Pigeons are definitely getting more, I don't know, uppity. They don't move out of the way when you walk down the street anymore. And my dad has been saying this for years. And when I was a kid, I was like, Dad, you're crazy. But I've noticed it. The pigeons literally won't get out of your way anymore.
I know.
They're making a move, I think.
It's like that Seinfeld episode. We had a deal, you know, when George hits the pigeon.
Gus, what do you got sitting at your number one animal
Sitting at number
movie?
One, I went into animation, and I went for Princess Mononoke. I think pretty animal-heavy, and they're depicted so beautifully. They're given personalities in a way that, you know, is obviously very direct. They can literally talk, but I don't know. It's just such a cool movie. It was one of the first ones I thought of. I don't know. I don't know anybody who hasn't seen this movie, but if there is somebody out there who hasn't seen this movie, go watch it. If you like Homeland, Claire Danes is in it as one of the voices. People hate on her in that role for that movie, but she's actually really awesome in it, as is everything else in the movie. Totally sweet.
He goes animated for his number one.
I like it.
I like it also. And at number one, I go classic all the way back to 1938.
Jesus.
A movie that stars Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn. They were just getting their start, and they started in this screwball comedy, Bringing Up Baby.
I can't believe I didn't think of that one. That's great.
This is a classic. And this is one of those you'll see on lists all the time as one of the funniest movies of all time. You got to see it. You rent it, and it lives up to it. Total screwball. Grant actually plays like a guy from a museum who's trying to put together his dinosaur last bone in this great dinosaur collection. And Hepburn plays this scatterbrained girl who sort of falls in love with them. And she actually at this time gets sent basically a tame leopard that is from her brother. And she needs to transfer it from like Connecticut to New York and needs his help. On top of that, there's a dog that ends up burying his dinosaur's bone. So it's got a lot of like goofy stuff going on with the animal. But the main thing is the leopard is in the car with him at one point. There's all kinds of goofy stuff in the hotel room. And actually, a circus is in town, and a dangerous leopard gets out and in place of the tame leopard that they think they have with them.
Of course.
Just ensues, Matt. And it's classic Cary Grant, Katharine Hepburn. You seen this one, Gus?
Oh, yeah. That's an amazing one. That I think that's the best pick of the picks we've had.
Holy cow.
I'm going to give that to you.
Good job, Rye.
A lot of strong picks here. I had a couple honorable mentions before we go to break. They're sort of cheesy ones, but people would probably be mad if we didn't mention Marley and Me. This was a big tearjerker a few years ago. March of the Penguins.
Yeah.
And that was it for me. The ones were mentioned.
You got to say Old Yeller. You just have to throw that out there. Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Yes.
Ooh,
yeah.
Forgot all about that.
Very, very close on my list.
Yeah. And how about Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus?
You love this movie. I have not seen it, though.
It's cheese gold. Debbie Gibson. Fantastic.
It's a sci-fi original, correct?
I don't know, but it's worth seeing. It's terrible. Terribly good.
I had Lamb Chop in the Land of No Manners, going way back to when I was a kid again. And I had Beauty and the Beast on there as well, but I felt like if I was going to cheat once, I had to cheat with Howling 2. So.
Well done.
Yeah,
well done.
Good picks.
What we're going to do is we're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to play trivia, Matt versus Gus, plus a cinema war looking at the new Red Dawn, and a couple of DVD reviews. We'll be right back on Cinema Jaw.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. In 1922, Rin Tin Tin made his film debut in a low-budget western called The Man from Hell's River. Rin Tin Tin's good looks, fearless ability, and on-screen talent attracted the attention of a struggling Warner Brothers studio. He went on to make 24 films that helped establish the new studio and made Rin Tin Tin a household name. During these years, Rin Tin Tin earned a salary of $1,000 a week. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact. It's $1,000 a week in 1924 for a freaking dog.
Holy.
1922.
He was a celebrity.
That's a lot of money. I don't make $1,000 a week.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with Gus Spellman from The Onion. Matt, before we go any further, we want to dip back into the Jaw box, some things that we missed in the first half of the show. Elias, what do we got going on there?
All right, so I did some research here, guys, so the listener didn't have to.
Yeah. So Elias, what did we miss in that first part?
Okay, so the male lead actor of The Birds is Rod Taylor.
All right.
And let's see. So we got some interesting breakdowns here. As far as what came first, Matt is saying The Birds could be considered the first zombie film. That came out in May of 1963, and Night of the Living Dead came out in October of 1968.
Ah,
but, so it could be.
Yes, but I did learn that arguably people say Victor Halperin's White Zombie, which was released in 1932, was the first zombie film.
Oh, yeah. Touche, man.
I mean, in tone, it's that apocalyptic thing going on in The Birds that really kind of lends itself to that zombie apocalypse tone.
Sure.
That is prevalent in modern zombie movies.
Fast-moving zombies, though, like World War Z.
Yeah.
That's apparently
well,
a big
the birds,
thing
right.
for World War Z. The birds are very fast. Zombies, generally slow.
Generally.
And before we close the box, guys, I just want to mention my two favorite animal films, which the Jawheads might be screaming at their podcast player that you guys didn't mention at all. One of them was Fievel the American Tail.
Oh, nice.
And also Milo and Otis. You guys didn't mention.
Good mentions.
Good.
Absolutely.
Good mention.
Okay, I'll go back.
I love this jaw box.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Matt, that brings us to a segment we call
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this. This is where me and Matt each week battle on a topic, and our guest this week, Gus Spellman, gets to play judge and jury and tell the Jawheads listening at home who he thinks won that Cinema War. And it's very important because we are vying for 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want, Matt. Now, there's a new Red Dawn remake coming out. It's blasphemy, I think. Matt's okay with it. Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic is Red Dawn, remake good idea or terrible idea. Matt, you'll be fighting that it's a good idea, and Rye, you'll be fighting that it's a terrible idea. Let the cinema war begin.
In 1984, the idea of Russia invading the U.S. was scary cool. In 2012, the idea of North Korean troops invading the U.S. is just plain stupid. At least have the balls to keep it as China invading like originally shot. Don't change it to North Korea in post-production.
Ryan, I, for one, am very excited to see the new Red Dawn movie. And I know you're going to go see it, too, if just to cry Wolverines one more time.
Matt, some ideas just don't work years later. In this modern age of technology, ranging from drones to radars, telecommunications to cell phones, the idea that North Korea would somehow pull off a sneaky invasion in the middle of the U.S., it just doesn't work. Come up with something new, Hollywood.
Yeah, the original movie is a classic, but times change, and this new urban-style combat is going to be an amazing thrill ride. If anything, this will just bring the original movie out of the bargain bin and get it respun a bunch of times. You can't resist the Wolverines, Ryan.
I'm not buying that, Matt. The 1984 cast was full of young American actors, from Swayze to Sheen, Jennifer Grey to C. Thomas Howell. This new version has a crappy cast headed up by Australian Chris Hemsworth. Stupid!
Oh, that's a weak argument, dude. Doesn't matter where the cast is from. I love the original with the woodland setting and everything, and the original cast was great, but at the time, but they were nobodies back then, and the suburban / urban setting is way more interesting and realistic, and this cast will shine. This is the movie they're coming out on, and hell, they have Thor on the Wolverines.
No way, Matt. When I hear someone yell, Wolverines, I think of C. Thomas Howell, not Chris Hemsworth holding a stupid hammer above his head. The original was a product of its time. Leave it alone.
All right, Hemsworth and the new cast of High School Freedom Fighters are set to be the next it people in Hollywood, and I can't wait for it. Let's not get bogged down so deeply in nostalgia that we can't let a cool story get an update for modern times. The world is scary again, Ryan. I'm glad that the Wolverines are out there.
Whoa. We are butting heads. We are arm wrestling, and no one's budging here, Matt. We throw it over to our judge and jury. Gus Spellman of The Onion, what'd you think of this cinema war?
All right, I have to say that I agree with Matt that it doesn't matter where the cast is from. You know, it's movie magic. People change ethnicities, they change nationalities, they change accents all the time. So that doesn't matter to me. I also agree that in principle, there's nothing wrong with remaking something, but I have to say that a lot of the remakes out there are just cheap ways to make money and reboot something that doesn't necessarily need to be rebooted. I think if you are going to reboot something, you need to do it the way, you need to like capture the feel of the original, something that I think a lot of remakes completely fail to do. You know, I think that, for example, the new James Bond, not like a good movie, not a good James Bond movie. They should have just made something new. It sounds like this new Red Dawn, they should have made a new movie about new kids. I don't know. I can't necessarily get behind the idea of completely updating something and just using the same name. So I got to go ahead and give this to Rye.
Oh, wow.
But I think it's more on my own principles than on
that's fair.
Merits of the argument necessarily.
Wow. I'll take a win any way I can get it though, Matt. I've been struggling here on Cinema War.
You deserve it, Ryan.
That earns me my 20 seconds. And actually, going along with what Gus was saying is all about my rant. Enough with these dumb remakes. And a lot of times in a situation like this, if you want to actually take the same idea and change it up, just make it your own. I hate that they got to tie in that it's Red Dawn. Change it, sort of, but at the same point, they're going to be yelling Wolverines and jumping out of the ground. Just change it entirely and don't call it Red Dawn. Make your own damn movie.
Yeah, I got to agree.
Yeah, you know what? In actuality, I kind of agree that they did puss out by making it the North Koreans instead of the Chinese. I am excited to see the movie, but, you know, like Gus was saying, maybe they could have made it a sequel. Like, these kids heard about the Wolverines that were attacked in 1984.
There were statues of the Wolverines at the end of the original Red Dawn.
Right, so, yeah. This could have been a sequel. It could have been something new.
You know, they wrote their names in the rock, and they had that nice memorial at the end. Sure. So. All right, so I got a cinema war under my win. Before we get to trivia, in honor of Hitchcock, we are playing movies that deal with Hollywood movie trivia. Two quick DVD reviews for you, Jawheads. First up, Rock of Ages. The Hair Metal musical is out on DVD, and for the most part, Matt, it's as corny as Warrant and Poison's music. There were a few elements I liked, such as hearing some of those older songs that I had not heard of for a while. I must admit I'm a closet fan of some of those. I, though, was also want to note, I was a fan of Russell Brand and Alec Baldwin in here. They have a hilarious relationship going. But Tom Cruise as Stacey Jacks was a total letdown. I just don't think it was a good role for him at all. Not to mention the two leads are just terrible. One of them being Julianne Hough as the young girl who moves out to L.A. from the Midwest. I've seen better acting on Saved by the Bell. Skip this one unless you're dying to sing along with Every Rose Has Its Thorn. Ride the movie guy's grade. 1.5 Jaws.
It's a shame. I was almost kind of excited for this one, but
I could see that being right up your alley. The other one is My Sister's Sister. This small film, Matt, should not be missed. It is perfectly cast with Mark Duplass, Emily Blunt, and Rosemarie DeWitt. Duplass plays Jack, a guy still getting over the death of his brother. He goes out to Emily Blunt's cabin for a break. However, her sister is also staying there at the time. From there, we have a guy hooking up with a girl, not knowing her sister, who he has feelings for, actually is in love with him as well. It's simple, smart, and downright hilarious at times. Please give this one a spin. Ride the movie guy's grade, 3.75 of a jaw for My Sister's Sister.
I saw Phantom Tollbooth. Yeah. So this is a classic. I don't know if you probably have never seen this.
I have not either.
It's one of the very rare animated films from MGM, although they do use some live action as well. And Eddie Munster plays the lead, is the little kid. It was great. It's a classic. You got to see this. It's about Milo, who's pretty much bored with school, and he doesn't feel like learning. He goes through the land of Dictionopolis and Digitopolis to try to release the princesses of rhyme and reason. And if that sounds like a kid's fairy tale, that's because it is, Ryan. It's a great movie to show your little kid to get him to be interested in school. But at the same time, it's really, really good. It was made by the guys that did Merry Melodies, who didn't do a lot of work after this. This was one of their last really big productions. Like Mel Blanc does a lot of the voices and stuff.
How many Jaws?
Oh, man. It's a classic. It's 3.5 easily.
Nice.
Yeah.
Brings us to a trivia, Matt.
Okay.
Yourself versus Gus. In honor of Hitchcock, we have movies about Hollywood movie trivia.
Okay.
Works like this. We go back and forth. There are steals if the person doesn't know it. And you each get one trip to the ER. Our producer, Elias Rodriguez, will help you out with a clue if you get stuck on a question. Now, Gus, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first.
I'll let Matt go first.
Question number one, Matt, in movies about Hollywood movie trivia. This actress played Marilyn Monroe in 2011's My Week with Marilyn.
Oh, man. Right off the bat, I'm...
Just came out.
Whew. No.
Nominated for an Academy Award for this role as Marilyn Monroe.
Is it Emily Blunt?
Gosh, you got a chance for a steal?
I know who it is. I'm not sure this is her name. Michelle Williams?
1-0, Gus, and the slaughter begins.
Yeah.
Question number two is over to Gus. In 1994's Ed Wood, Johnny Depp played the title character, but who played Bela Lugosi, a role that won the actor an Oscar?
I have no idea. I'm going to guess and say Christopher Walken.
Not a bad guess, though. I like that you threw it out there. Matt, I know you're a fan of Ed Wood.
I am.
Johnny Depp obviously played Ed Wood, but who played Bela Lugosi, a role that won the actor an Oscar?
Won him an Oscar? I didn't know that Ed Wood was an Oscar-winning movie.
In fact, let me tell you, he edged out Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction for the Oscar for Best Supporting here.
I don't want to go to the ER on a pass.
I should have gone to the ER.
Leslie Nielsen. No idea.
Leslie Nielsen. Martin Landau. We were looking for Martin Landau.
Yeah, I never would have guessed that.
Still 1-0, Gus. Question number three is over to Matt K. Ben Stiller, Jack Black, and Robert Downey Jr. played actors making a war film in this 2008 comedy.
Tropic Thunder.
1-1. We're all tied up. We throw question number four over to Gus. In 1999's Bowfinger, Eddie Murphy plays Kit Ramsey, a sought-after star by rundown director Robert Bowfinger, who is played by what actor? You do have an ER. It was Eddie Murphy and
I have a guess. Bowfinger. I have a guess, which could be right, could be wrong. I'm not going to the ER. I'm going to say Steve Martin.
Yeah. Damn it, I knew that one.
Wow. 2-1. 2-1, Gus. And we throw question number 5 over to Matt Kay. Gene Kelly, Debbie Reynolds, and Donald O'Connor star in this musical about the transition from silent films to talkies.
Singing in the Rain?
Big ball game we got going here, guys. You can cut the tension with a knife. It's 2-2, and we throw question number 6 over to Gus. In 2004's The Aviator, Leonardo DiCaprio plays Howard Hughes, who dated Katherine Hepburn, who was played by what actress?
Cate Blanchett.
Wow. 3-2. Gus, and no one's used an ER. I don't know if you guys don't like Elias here.
How many questions?
Cow. It's just only 8 questions. Oh. Question number 7 over to Matt Kay. This actor put on the hat and mustache to play Charlie Chaplin in the 1992 film Chaplin.
That was Robert Downey Jr.
3-3. It's the last question of the game. Over to Gus. He can win it on a walk-off. In 1992... Tim Robbins starred in this Robert Altman film in which a studio executive is blackmailed.
Well, just because I want to give Elias some
Elias
some play here with the ER, could you give me the answer to this, please?
ER only gives you a clue, please.
Okay, I'll give a clue. Sorry, could you give me a clue?
What was the name of that Tim Robbins film in 1992, Elias?
All right, I hope you got your insurance card here. your clue is... participant on a sports field.
Take it away, Matt.
You don't know.
I don't got it. Got nothing.
A participant on a sports field. Tough clues from the ER today.
A participant on a sports field.
Can you double down on ERs? Do we get a can you get a second clue?
The player?
Wow. Matt wins this one.
Holy crap.
Wow.
I told you, man. Player. I told you. Well done.
Well done. Wow. Matt wins this one 4-3. Great game, though. Back and forth they went. There was a jawbreaker, we call him, if there was a tie. Gus, better Hollywood title, Doc Hollywood or the Hollywood Knights?
I'd go with Doc Hollywood. I like that.
Absolutely incorrect. It's actually Hollywood Knights. Probably didn't know.
Wait, better?
Just better.
All right.
I'm kidding. The real jawbreaker was this. Age of Debbie Reynolds. She is Carrie Fisher's mom. She was in Singing in the Rain. She still has a heartbeat. Age of Debbie Reynolds. Matt, closest to. What do
She's
you got?
She's still alive?
Yep.
83 years old.
Elias, can you lock him in at 83? Got him locked in. Gus?
Carrie Fisher looks older than she is because of all the drugs, but I'm still going to go with 91.
Wow. We give that one to Matt. She's 80 years old.
Sorry, Carrie and Debbie.
She's actually, I'm surprised she's still living, frankly, but wow.
Still going.
Going strong. God bless her.
Yeah. Coming to an end of a great jaw here. Elias, first time coming on as a new producer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. This is a blast.
And we got to thank our guest, Gus Spellman of The Onion. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, guys. This is a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
And obviously, the best place for jawheads to check out The Onion is
TheOnion.com. TheOnion.com, yep.
And do you have like a Twitter or anything you want to plug?
I do have a Twitter. I don't tweet that much funny stuff, but it's melodramatic, like melodramatic, except it's MELLODRAMEDIC. So it's like 4 puns in one. I think it's pretty funny. Nobody else thinks it's funny. So it's kind of a preview of what my Twitter is like.
I love it. Again, Gus, thanks for coming on Cinema Jaw. It was a blast.
Thanks, guys. It was.
Yeah. I want to thank our sponsors, The New 400.
Yeah, and Movie Pass. We'll have a news story next week on what they're doing. So
until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movie.